The state of the state. Did Mike Pence make a convincing argument for a tax cut? Are state Senate Republicans attempting a power grab? The House Speaker joins with Democrats on a jobs bill and a new attempt to limit the sale of cold medicine. That, plus Karen Pence's state house office and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 25, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, Governor Mike Pence delivered his first State of the State address, telling state lawmakers that we can afford a tax cut. Even some of the governor's fellow Republicans have been cautious about supporting a tax cut. Pence wants to cut your state income tax by 10%. In a speech delivered without the help of a teleprompter, Pence said it's part of what makes his spending plan a jobs budget.
This reduction in taxes will unleash $500 million into the private voluntary economy every year. Letting Hoosiers keep more dollars to spend, invest, or save will be good for Indiana families and businesses.
Family farms. Did Mike Pence change any minds? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, Eric Bradner, State House Bureau Chief for the Evansville Courier and Press, and John Ketzenberger, President of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Dan Parker, was that a compelling speech?
I don't think so. He's got more work to do, I think, to convince the legislature. I think that folks are going to be respectful of his position. They're going to have to prove it, that we need it. But there's other priorities that this legislature is going to have to deal with. I mean, there's a lot of pent-up demand because over the last several budget cycles, it's been cut, cut, cut. And education needs to be a focus. But I do think that the legislators will be respectful and listen and hear him out.
Was that speech directed more at the legislators or more at the folks at home?
No, it was a combination of both. But I can tell you that this thing's picking up some momentum. Early on, right after the election, of course, the immediate response from everybody was, look, you know, we got all this pent-up desire for other things that we've been, you know, having to put on the side for a while. Now we need to bring those back to speed. There is starting to be some momentum that we can do the things that we need to do and do the tax cut. And as I've said on here before, this is all going to boil down to that last revenue forecast. I had the Ways and Means Chairman tell me that again today, that we're not going to know until April when that last forecast comes out what kind of money the state's dealing with. But this thing's picked up some steam that it didn't have a month ago. And I think Mike's going to take his message to the people now. And he's right about the economy. This is about jobs, and that would put a lot of money back in the economy.
Well, I think if there's momentum there, it's because lawmakers want to give the governor what he's asking for. But I thought one of the more interesting developments this week was Eric Turner's bill that calls for getting rid of the automatic taxpayer refund. So essentially it would eliminate two other tax cuts to make this one possible.
Yeah, you know, obviously Mike Pence has to fight this battle in two places, in the State House and outside the State House. And he's losing it in the State House. So I don't know if there's momentum, but he needs it. Legislators are hearing from people. They're not just talking to themselves. They're hearing from local folks who are in county government who are needing money for transportation. They're hearing from teachers. They're, you know, all of these sort of organizations back in their home districts. And it's, you know, somebody's got to lose. There's only so much money. There's more than there has been in the past, but education, transportation, / county governments that need money for it, and Mike Pence can't all win.
There's not a lot of money there.
Well, you know, I think there is enough. I mean, if the question is there enough to do it all? Yes. The answer is yes. But you put yourself in a danger zone if the economy doesn't perform at least as well as expected. And if it turns down at all, you're looking at a situation like we had after Frank O'Bannon was governor with a big surplus, have a recession, and then you're looking at deficits in about 2 years. And so I think the better question is, what's the best balance? And I got to say that Representative Turner's plan is pretty clever. And I think that the momentum that Mike is making reference to is probably predicated on that. And you can't forget the tax rebate that you get is really just a credit, so you really don't see any money.
Right.
But if you reduce the income tax, you'll see that.
It's a shell game, though, isn't it?
Not really. And when I say not really, I think what Turner's proposal is going to do. Remember they've talked about changing the threshold to make it more difficult to give the money back anyway,
right,
because they didn't want to have been a situation where, you know, they're always pushing up against that. So I think the Turner proposal is going to get some real attention before it's over, and that may be part of the mix. And I think that's one of the reasons that people are starting to say we can do these things, give a tax cut,
but go back into spending
that people want to spend
for
things like education, yeah, transportation.
But if you do that plan, it ends up being less taxes for us at home, but instead of a credit, it's a tax cut.
Right.
So you get
it
at a different
month.
Time. But the bottom line isn't any different.
But it depends on how much money you get, how much money you make, and so forth and so on.
I mean, the conservative position here should be to wait, because look, our gaming revenue is going down.
True.
What's the forecast going to look like? Does this really actually help the middle class, which really needs the help? And I think those are a lot of questions for him to answer that he's going to have to come up with.
All right. Lawmakers from both parties gave the governor style points for his delivery in the state of the state. When it comes to content, they were more reserved. Neither Republican nor Democratic leaders were willing to endorse the tax cut, though they promised to keep listening.
Governor Pence has a case to make. He has a case to make that if you make these changes in Indiana's tax code, is that truly going to empower the middle class in a way that grows jobs for Indiana?
But in the end, affordability is going to be a key factor in this. And also, is it the best way or not to stimulate the Hoosier economy?
Senate President Pro Tem David Long there, preceded by House Minority Leader Scott Peleth, Mike McDaniel. Are lawmakers trying to send the message that they're in control?
I don't think that's the message you're trying to send, although they want to send that message, if you know what I mean. Look, this speech was very well received by Republicans and Democrats alike. And I think part of that is the way Mike Pence delivers the message. And the fact that he has been a lawmaker and comes from the legislative branch makes a huge difference to these folks. He knows how to communicate with them, as opposed to being, this is how we're going to do it, and pointing at them. Even Mitch Daniels will tell you the one thing he learned over the course of the time he was governor was when he first started out, it was kind of, this is what we're going to do. But later he said, this is what I want to accomplish. I don't care how you get there, get there. And that made a whole difference in how legislators responded to Mitch. Mike knows that from the start, and that's a huge plus in how he communicates.
Yeah, I heard a Democratic lawmaker this week say that he thought that this guy did a better job of relating than the previous governor.
Well, no one has ever questioned Mike Pence's ability to communicate. No one. But I think that one of the things, because he was a federal lawmaker, not a state lawmaker, the legislative leadership and many members of the General Assembly, even though we have a lot of turnover, remember those years when we had, the last time we had $2 billion and we decided to cut a lot of taxes that a lot of people didn't see and feel, and it didn't stimulate anything, and then we went into recession, and then we had a problem. And I think the legislative leadership is given a little bit of institutional memory here, which is a good thing.
Let's talk about presentation a little bit. I mentioned that he didn't use a teleprompter. Every governor since 1984 has. He says he didn't like having to look from side to side, but it's a televised address, and when you're looking from side to side, your head's up. He was reading out of his hand at times.
Well, I think that's true. And, if you want to talk pure presentation, I see this often as much as we were talking about that before. He has to communicate with the state, and that's done through the television set. And so I don't think this played as well on television as it probably did in the chamber. he's got a good feel for it, though. Very, you know, he's charming, if you will, when it comes to delivering this kind of an address. So while it didn't come off as polished as maybe some of the others had, I still think it was effective.
He also, because he wasn't using a prompter, was able to edit on the fly. And some of his radio and TV training apparently took hold because he got out on time by cutting out some things.
Yeah, he cut out a reference to Ronald Reagan, which wasn't really necessary given that the entire speech was sort of a callback to Ronald Reagan. But yeah, he did. And you know, look, it was well received, yes, but a lot of that is because he's focusing on things like workforce development.
Things that are hard to argue with.
They're very hard to argue with. I mean, sure, probably good ideas, not commenting on the merits of the ideas, but politically it doesn't take a lot of talent to get that done.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should Mike Pence use a teleprompter for major speeches? Your choices are A, yes, the audience expects it, B, no, casual is good, or C, let him do what he wants. Last week's question was, what's more important, money to schools or an income tax cut? 66% said money to schools, 20% said a tax cut, 14% said a little of both. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Marion County Democrats are accusing Republicans of a power grab that would give GOP Mayor Greg Ballard more authority and limit the power of the City County Council. It could be an early test of just how far Republicans are willing to go with the new power they have with supermajorities in both houses of the General Assembly. Democratic leaders came to the State House this week to protest the bill that would eliminate the four at-large members of the City County Council. They are all Democrats. Currently, the bill would also shift the balance of power in the city county building by giving the mayor a line item veto along with the ability to change numbers in the budget.
We believe this is a simple power grab. It's a power grab. It's an attempt to take away the authority that the city county council has.
Why is the state legislature being asked to solve what is not a problem at a local level other than a political problem?
John Ketzenberger, are they misreading the situation?
I think it's pretty plain, don't you? I think they've read it exactly as it was intended. And when even before I saw who was the sponsor of the bill, I had a suspicion that it was probably Senator Mike Young. And gosh, he knows how to have a good time, doesn't he? Look, this is exactly what he wants. He's sending the shot across the bow. I'll be shocked if it gets through. Because if it was such a great idea, why wouldn't they do the same thing for second-class cities and eliminate all the large positions on their councils? And you also got to remember that you know, nothing is forever in politics. And what happens if a Democrat comes back into that seat and then gets all the power that's bestowed on this current mayor?
Yeah, there may be some missing logic there. But does it serve? Tell me, does it serve the supermajorities well to just send the message that we could do some things?
Yes, frankly, yes. I mean, it's a clear display of power, and power is about perceptions, not necessarily action. So yeah, and when you look at this, it's also a little bit remarkable. Think back 40, 50 years when places are doing things like Unigov. These at-large seats were really dominated by Republicans. There was an effort to have these big 29, 31 in Nashville member councils so that there could be some minority representation that wouldn't exist if the whole thing was elected citywide. So.
Yeah, Republicans created this system.
Well, in 1970, the Republicans created this system. And to answer Representative Delaney's question, why are they doing it in the legislatures? Because being the only first-class city in the state, this is the only place you can do it.
Right.
So he ought to understand that. Apparently, he's having trouble getting his arms around that. But this is a situation where, everything that's in this, asking for the mayor not to have to have approval for appointments, in Annapolis is the only mayor that has that in all of Indiana. So why not make him like everybody else? The rest of the parts of this bill, including asking that the Council of Fort Large be eliminated, in the 1980s and the 1990s, the Democrats asked that they take these out of the at-large process. So, you know, Mike Young will show you that.
You've heard Ann talk about foolish consistency.
That's it. Mike Young will show you the documentation where the Democrats asked for the very stuff that's right in this bill. And so I think this is more than just a shot across the bow. I actually think this thing's going to move.
Well, I
be
expect...
Be careful what you wish for.
Well, yeah, but I expect it'll get a hearing now, whether it gets a vote or not.
Changing the Fort Larch doesn't change them from the last election. It's for future elections.
The problem
are you saying
is,
that we're always going to win
those? The problem here is that can Mike Young do it, and can the supermajority show their power? Sure. Does that help the Republican Party in Marion County? Absolutely not. So, you know, you can shove things down the city county council's throat, but it doesn't mean that you're going to win the next election.
Well, that's right.
And that's
nobody
the problem with your party right now in a lot of other places across the country. Since you couldn't win, you're now trying to change the rules.
Well, look, nobody says this is not about reversing the last election. These are for elections going forward. It affects everybody. There's nothing that says the Republicans are going to win four years from now.
So what Republican in the donut wants to move back to Marion County and run for mayor?
Well, this raises a lot of questions. Here's something you don't see very often. A Republican leader and a Democratic leader working together on an economic development proposal in the General Assembly. House Speaker Brian Bosma joined with Minority Leader Scott Peleth this week to propose the creation of a new Indiana Career Council to find ways to train workers.
It's my hope with coordinated effort led by a governor who will be the chair of the ICC that we can align the jobs that are available today in Indiana with those who are seeking jobs.
We all agreed that there's a significant problem that exists and that there's job openings and not enough qualified applicants.
All right, Eric Bradner, will that proposal fly?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. It'll.
It's at odds with a governor proposal, right?
It is, but it sounds like there have been some conversations about ways to mesh these things and have everybody sort of come out looking like a winner. The thing is, this is a 2014 story more than it's a 2013 story. This is about putting some things in place, but we won't really see much impact. Many people directed toward job openings until a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now. So that's why this isn't very controversial right now, because you don't have to prove results right away.
Will that togetherness last?
I think it'll last. Yeah, I do. I think that Representative Peleth has recognized the situation. I think there are a lot of things, particularly in the governor's platform, that he can agree with. Jobs has been something they've pounded the whole time. So certainly on this issue, barring some kind of a crazy thing happening, it'll last. And I think they're looking for openings to have some bipartisanship.
Brian Bosma said that he thought that in a supermajority it might be more important to reach out, but the change in Democratic leadership has made this easier.
Well, I mean, Scott is you saw it in the earlier clip as well. I mean, his focus has been on the middle class and jobs, and this is a perfect opportunity. And it's nice to see bipartisanship once in a while at the State House, and this is an issue that I think deserves it.
Does it make it, if you have some joint projects, does it make it more difficult to be partisan?
Well, I think that any time you work together, the partisanship's always going to exist. But I think the more you work together, the less the personal, animosity will be out the window, and we can get things done.
Is Brian Bosma trying to send the message that we like the fact that Pat Bauer isn't your leader anymore?
I don't think that's about that. I think this is about jobs. Republicans and Democrats alike want to do what we can to bring the economy back as strong as we possibly can. Indiana leads the nation in almost every major category about creating a climate for jobs. But the one thing we're woefully lacking is having enough skilled people to fill the jobs, and especially in advanced manufacturing that we have. Indiana is always going to be a manufacturing state, and we got to do everything we can to make sure we have a workforce to fill those jobs. And Republicans and Democrats alike understand that, and that's why you're seeing this unity around this issue. I think it's refreshing. I think it's going to last a long time, as John indicated, and I think Scott, Representative Peleth, I should say, understands. Mm-hmm. That this is a nice opportunity for them to work together to do something that's going to be positive for Indiana. And he's come together. And Mike Pence, remember, he talked about this in his campaign. And I think you're right. I think they're going to all come together at the end of this. You're going to see a hybrid of the governor's plan with what the Senate's talking about, what the House is talking about. And I think we're all going to be better for it.
You got to enjoy the fact, though, that this week we're witnessing an attempted power grab at the same time that we see this togetherness.
Well, you called it that. I don't.
I've heard some state Senate Republicans have told me privately that it's a power grab.
It's a power grab.
So I don't feel bad about using the term. All right. A bill at the State House would change the way the state keeps track of how much cold medicine people buy, and the goal is a tougher crackdown on methamphetamine. For the past 7 years, Indiana has been tracking the purchase of pseudoephedrine. It's a key ingredient in cold and allergy medicines, and it's also an ingredient for meth. A new bill would limit the amount that you could buy to 72 grams a year, but some say it should be less than that.
28.8 grams will give an individual 4 months' worth a year. So if you have seasonal allergies, which is what 90% of the people use it for, then 4 months should be taking care of that problem for you.
Representative Ron Bacon there. Mike McDaniel, should allergy sufferers be inconvenienced?
No. There are virtually hundreds of thousands of people in the state who use this product very well and do it legally, and it serves them very well. They should not be penalized and should not have to go to the doctor and have the expense of getting a prescription to get these medications.
Which, that's not in the bill now, but it's being talked about, right?
But it has been talked about by a lot of people.
Right.
And Senator Carlin Yoder has a bill that would deal with this without making it prescription only, because using a system that's in place and doing a variety of other things to make the penalties tougher for those people who are abusing it and using it for meth purposes. So no, we shouldn't penalize people for using pseudoephedrine properly.
But meth is a huge problem in Indiana.
It's a huge problem. The coalition of mayors, this was one of their planks that they wanted to see the state legislature deal with. They need to deal with the issue. The question is, what's the appropriate line, like Michael articulated. When we had over close to 1,500 meth labs busted just last year here in Indiana. I mean, four or five meth labs a day are being busted by our law enforcement. We have a huge problem, particularly down in Eric's neck of the woods. And you know, I think that we got to do something.
So here's an option. Try a two-year pilot program. Say that counties can adopt ordinances saying that you have to go to the doctor and get a prescription for pseudoephedrine, or you know, you can only get a certain amount per year. That would be a lot more popular in some of these areas that have a serious meth problem than it would be, say, in Indianapolis.
But does it make sense to approach this county by county?
No.
Well, here's another option that might be considered, too, and that would be, you know, a lot of money is spent on enforcement of, you know, trying to bust these meth labs that you're talking about, Dan. Maybe make more appropriations. I know everybody's talking about wanting money, but this is poison, okay? And there are ways to get rid of that poison. And I think you have to find a balance between regulation and not, but put some money behind it. Create a task force to go out and beat these things up and try to beat it that way.
A lot of this meth now is Mexican imported meth, and it's not stuff that's being made with pseudoephedrine.
Although, but there's still an awful lot of meth labs.
There's a lot of meth labs being busted. I mean, this is a public safety issue
but
beyond a health issue.
I still
issue.
Weigh the hundreds of thousands of people that use this this product properly, and that the cost of having them go to the doctor, get a prescription, is just ridiculous.
Yeah, states that have done some of these things haven't seen a reduction in
Oregon
access to meth, but fewer explosions, things like that.
All right, finally, new Indiana First Lady Karen Pence will have an office in the State House. That's never been done before. Both Mrs. Pence and her staff now occupy space that belonged to the budget director in the Daniels administration. It's just down the hall from the governor's office. Karen Pence had a high profile during the campaign, and a spokeswoman for the Pence administration says she plans to be an active yet traditional First Lady. The governor's residence will be reserved for family activities.
First Lady is a position that in Washington has been enhanced through the years, and I think she could play a pivotal role around here on a lot of different issues.
State Senator Jim Merritt there. Before we go on, we should mention Mrs. Pence had emergency gallbladder surgery this week, and I understand she's recovering and want to send our best wishes for a fast recovery. Having said that, why hasn't a State House office been created for First Lady before?
Good question. I don't know, but I mean, I don't think anyone sees this as an issue. If the Pences agree that if she wants to work out of the State House, I think we should let her.
This is a great idea. She's going to be a tremendous First Lady. Hope she's feeling better. I understand she was in a great deal of pain, and she's going to end up being great for Indiana.
nothing. I've gotten some email from folks saying, you know, who's paying for this? I mean, taxpayers paid for office space and for a staff at the residence. It's just a change of location.
Yeah, there's no real controversy here, just because federal, state level executives and their wives, first lady, first man, whatever, get some, you know, protection from law enforcement, some amenities that normal people don't get. This is not that out of the ordinary.
I'm looking forward to seeing what her role will be and what issues emerge as being key to her. And I think it's great that spouses, always in the case of Indiana, first ladies, are engaged in the process. And maybe we will have, you know, the other reverse at some time. That'd be kind of fun, too.
She's a teacher. She's interested in art. She's helped develop an art therapy program at Riley Hospital. I'd look for some of those sorts of things.
All terrific. More power to her.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, Eric Bradner of the Evansville Courier and Press, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.